It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up on Central Time, Wisconsin's roads are in bad shape and the road budget is up in the air. WPR Capital Bureau Chief Sean Johnson joins us to discuss his five-part series on transportation issues and the lack of funding to fix them. First, as the Trump administration reviews new plans to counter ISIS in the Middle East, there are ongoing concerns over the potential for attacks inspired by the group here in the United States. At the same time, there's concern about terror attacks motivated by extremist groups on the far right after an attack on a Canadian mosque and a foiled attack plan allegedly targeting a synagogue in Florida. According to some reports, the Trump administration is planning to target counter-extremism efforts to prevent attacks inspired by ISIS and similar groups while dialing down efforts against far-right extremism. Our next guest says both should be a priority and it could be dangerous to ignore either of them. Brian Levin joins us now. He's a professor of criminal justice and director of the Center for the Study of Hate and Extremism at the University of California, San Bernardino. Brian, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, can we focus on both as a strategy, Brian? You know, ISIS-inspired violence and similar groups on the one hand, and far-right or white nationalist extremism on the other. Is there room in both for counter-extremist strategy?
Well, not only is there room for both, when I testified before Congress a little over a year ago, this is exactly what I said we should do. And it's more true now. We have the most multifaceted threat matrix that we've had in recent American history. And you can't just concentrate on one part of the ice when the shot on goal might come from another.
So the most multifaceted, I mean, I've only listed really two, ISIS and similar groups, Islamist extremist violence on the one hand, right-wing violence on the other. Is there more than that, or is that plenty?
Oh, no. We've got a diverse mix. We have nationalists of all kinds. We have single-issue folks, for instance, anti-abortion, violent anti-abortion, not people of goodwill, like my friends in the Catholic Church or something like that. We have an emergent, though not yet fully coalesced, hard left. So, and one of the things I think is important is, look, obviously, each movement, each extremist movement has its own set of leaders, its own goals, its own methods and tactics. But what we see during times of inflection, where we're at now, we see the ground shifting under the feet of many. What's important to understand is that affects a slew of extremist movements, and on top of that, the role that social networking plays in radicalizing and organizing folks of many different stripes. So absolutely, violent Salafist jihadists have their own ideological foundations, but a lot of the strategies and a lot of the conditions that affect radicalism in one instance very well can affect others. So what you do is you start off, for instance, like they do in medical school. This is the body. And then you go into the different types of maladies that might affect different organs and things like that. And that's where I think the mistake is being made. We have a threat that exists because we're at an inflection point, and then on top of that, we have social networking and this kind of reciprocal conflict and hatred where we could have a terrorist attack tomorrow and some other extremist will respond to it. So we really have to look at this holistically and not just cover one eye and say, we're going to ignore these others.
When I think of a lot of attacks or even foiled attacks lately, it isn't, you know, you picture the radical cell meeting up in a back room somewhere. Now it seems like the so-called lone wolf, the individual who's inspired by things they see maybe online, but they plan and organize their own attack. A, is that really the trend we're seeing? And B, if so, what do we do about that?
It is the trend we're seeing, although it depends on where you are. For instance, there is a tendency by some to say, look what's happening in Europe. Europe has a much different history and demographic and assimilation experience than we do, for instance. So right now, if you were to ask me across the ideological spectrum, if you had to, like, you know, hold me hostage and say who would represent the most frequent threat, it would be a loner or small cell that's not necessarily directed or coordinated. But that goes across the ideological spectrum, from sovereign citizens all the way to violent Salafist jihadists, all the way to an emergent but still nascent hard left, which is not yet at the point where some of these other extremists are, but it's something that we're keeping our eye on. And particularly with regard to loners, as more people see a change going on and feel powerless to do things, they have a repository on the internet that identifies tactics and targets and timing, so you don't have to join a group in the way that you did 20 or 30 years ago.
Right. So as a counter-extremist strategy, how the heck do you stop that? Because 99% of people who post, I made that number up, but most people who post an angry thing on the internet of whatever ideology are probably never going to commit an act of violence. How do you hone in on those very few who will?
That is a great question. And some of the research out there indicates that in a certain proportion of these plots, I've even heard the term, the number 40%, there's something called leakage. So for instance, give you an example. A lot of this can be over-inclusive, but in virtually every attack involving violent Salafist jihadists, even folks who pledge allegiance to ISIS, like what happened in San Bernardino, we noticed that they had Inspire magazine. So that might be a tip-off. If people start collecting weapons, or if people that are known in their community to their family suddenly become more aloof, and they're talking about violence or have some connection to weaponry in a way that does not appear usual, that's something that we should look at across the ideological spectrum. So when I go and train law enforcement, I talk about broad trends, and that includes everything, for instance, from firearms and bombs and things like that, to the use of social media, which many of these extremists share. And so what I'm saying is, you might have an extremist with ideology A who might look at websites from a completely different ideology because they might promote or train on tactics. So what we're seeing is a great cross-pollination with regard to strategies, even if the ideologies are different.
We're talking to Brian Levin, director of the Center for the Study of Hate and Extremism at the University of California, San Bernardino. Brian, we've heard some reports, and this is not 100% locked in, but that the Trump administration really wants to shift most counter-extremism efforts to target various forms of Islamist extremism, less so on homegrown far-right, or you're saying now it sounds like far-left potential terrorist attacks. What do you think about that?
Let me just say, because I don't want to be the lead story on Hannity tonight. The hard left is at a different point than these other extremist movements. However, the fact that there is such wide discontent on the left, as time continues, what we are worried about is more people will say the normal political processes aren't working, and then they, we'll see an emergence of something similar, perhaps to the SLA, which kidnapped Patty Hearst, or the Weather Underground, which bombed the Capitol. In any event, trying to directly answer your question, it is thoroughly appropriate to look at violent Salafist jihadist terrorism. Indeed, there's going to be a change going on with respect to that as ISIS comes under increasing pressure territorially and with regard to their leadership. But nevertheless, they will continue to have a repository on the internet and in social media to promote not only their ideologies, but also to radicalize and even train by proxy. However, we have such a diverse risk now that the idea that we would be devoting a disproportionate amount of resources to just one threat, for whatever reason, maybe it's politics, I'm not here to cast aspersion on people, but we really have to look at the broad range of threats. And if you look at some of the data out there, it indicates that the threat from the hard right has been nearly as significant. Some researchers will say you more in the post 9/11 era. Our center still maintains that the biggest threat comes from the most prominent threat comes from violent Salafist jihadists. But tomorrow we could wake up to, God forbid, another Sikh temple shooting, or a Quebec, or something else, or something against a Jewish institution. There's such a diversity with regard to not only ideologies, but also unstable people who will attach and pick and choose pieces of ideologies, that we can't just focus on any one area, because we'll leave a lot of the shots on goal not covered.
And Brian, as we wrap up, and we in the media obviously pay a lot of attention to terrorism, you and your line of work more so, but from the perspective of the public, is the overall risk of being affected directly by a terrorist attack all that high?
No, until it is. Mm-hmm. And what I'm saying is, I testified before Congress at the end of October. By early December, our community was hit. But bottom line is, we have a big risk from the disbursement of heavy weaponry and handguns throughout the United States. But you're much more likely of being killed in a vehicular accident where we have 30,000 deaths or more per year than in a terrorist attack. However, here's the thing that we're seeing. We're seeing an increasing desire for terrorists to use weapons of mass destruction, and we're seeing the body counts increase over time. So that's something that is of concern to us. So in some ways, looking in the rearview mirror doesn't tell us what the wild card will be tomorrow.
We'll leave it there. Brian, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
That was Brian Levin, professor of criminal justice and director of the Center for the Study of Hate and Extremism at the University of California, San Bernardino.